InvestorIdeas.com podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of InvestorIdeas.com podcast. In today's podcast, I'll be looking at a few public company announcements and how they relate to recent news regarding continued layoffs in Canada, cannabis bills being put forward in Texas and California, pre-ground bud sales, as well as cannabis in Thailand. So first today, starting with Sundial Incorporated, who announced changes to its operations through a huge right-sizing of cannabis cultivators in Olds, Alberta, in an effort to focus the facility on premium products and brands. Now, the Valens Company transaction has accelerated the need to optimize and rationalize Sundial's manufacturing and operational footprint to better address market saturation and oversupply. We've made the difficult decision to materially reduce staffing and activity levels in Olds, Alberta, in order to improve the efficiency of our operations as one of Canada's largest adult-use cannabis manufacturers, said Zach George, the Chief Executive Officer of Sundial. So Sundial has initiated a headcount reduction of approximately 85 employees at the Olds facility as part of the larger phased cost-saving program that's expected to deliver close to $9 million in savings across labor and operational costs. And the cost-saving initiatives are expected to position Sundial to exceed its previously announced integration savings as a result of the acquisition of Valens. Now, the company's ongoing focus on high-quality cannabis cultivation operations combined with Valens' low-cost biomass procurement capabilities will enhance Sundial's ability to offer a wide range of customized innovative products to meet customer demand and current market conditions. And Sundial is confident that consumers will not see changes to the availability and quality of the company's brands. Though its integration and rationalization efforts, the company is assessing all assets and will continue to make decisions based on sustainable profitability. So we see another large-scale producer in Canada doing layoffs, not as significant of a number as some of the other companies we've seen. Again, I talked about Canopy earlier this week. So Sundial not going to the same measures and not quite for the exact same reasons. With Canopy growth, again, there was a lot of understanding kind of early on that a lot of the facilities they were designing and building weren't going to be very sustainable for the long term in the cannabis industry as it kept evolving. And that's what most of the other LPs have run into, is the fact that a lot of these facilities, a lot of their sort of overall business structure wasn't really built for sustainability or for profitability. With Sundial, it's a little bit of a different, like I said, motivation here. They do have their partnership with Valens to consider at the moment, and they do have to sort of consider what assets they do focus on and how that's going to affect their overall business profile at the moment. But still, in general, what we're seeing is a continued trend of layoffs for most LPs in Canada, which obviously isn't a good thing. But that being said, that is being discussed today. So there's a link attached in the article, but you can also just check out Cannabis Council of Canada, where President and CEO George Smitherman will be holding a press conference with several cannabis sector CEOs on Parliament Hill to discuss the impact recent layoffs and facility closures are having on producers of all sizes across Canada. So that's happening at 11:15 Eastern Time today. So I would highly recommend checking out their website later in the day to see if they've uploaded any of the video from that, to see sort of what was being discussed. Again, I'm sure there's going to be a few articles about it today. There was obviously the sort of Associated Press were allowed access right away, and then there was a few independent that I think also attended. And some of it was in person and some of it was over Zoom as well. So definitely something worth paying attention to today if you haven't already heard of it or haven't looked into it. They are going to be discussing this trend of layoffs in the Canadian market. And hopefully there will be some sort of good discussions that actually come out of it. I do think that a lot of this isn't that confusing to most people within the industry at this moment, as a lot of these companies did sort of overextend themselves early on. And a lot of these layoffs and sort of facility closures that we're seeing now were a lot of facilities that didn't really make sense as far as sustainability and profitability from the get-go. Again, when I was sort of early talking about cannabis legalization in Canada, there was a lot of million and 1.2 million square foot facilities that were coming online. Aurora was a great example of a lot of really over-the-top facilities that kind of materialized into nothing over the long term, Canopy as well. And then there was a few other companies that have been posting similar layoffs in the last couple of weeks. So I would expect this trend to continue possibly for a little bit into the year, if not through the year. just because, again, there are a lot of these large-scale facilities that don't really make sense for where the industry is heading right now. Again, I've talked about this a lot of times, where if you look at what's going on in the industry, looking at sort of a light asset light model, where you're partnering with microcultivators is what most of these businesses are pivoting to. And there's nothing really that negative with that when you're looking at the overall jobs that are going to be lost slash created within the industry. It becomes somewhat of a wash. And I would say that in general, the sort of training and skill assessment that's going on in a large scale production facility versus the training and skill assessments going on for employees in more of a microcultivator facility, you're going to have better employees in more of the microcultivator environment. They're going to learn more. They're going to have access to touching the plant more. And hopefully there's going to be more expertise within that type of environment than there is going to be within large scale mass production. Basically, you just become similar to a warehouse employee, you know, essentially the same as you would for any large scale conglomerate corporation. So I do think in general, there's not that much of a negative. Something else to consider for a lot of these companies is the amount of PR and IR people that a lot of them have hired. That's something to consider within these layoffs, as I'm sure that will be a small percentage of the people who are also going, as again, a lot of these companies sort of overposition themselves with having these huge marketing teams and huge PR teams. And in general, we've seen how the stocks have responded over time. It hasn't really, you know, bared any fruit for a lot of these companies. And I would say on the other hand as well, there hasn't really been opportunities for marketing or advertising. So that's been a huge waste as well. Something else to consider when you look at what kind of layoffs we might be seeing next within the Canadian space, that is something to be considered. So in recent news, Texas cities and counties could legalize recreational marijuana if a new bill passes the state legislature. Currently, two-thirds of Texans do approve legalizing marijuana for recreational use by people ages 21 and older, according to a recent poll by the Hobby School of Public Affairs at the University of Houston. So House Bill 1937, filed by Representative Jessica Gonzalez, who is a Democrat from Dallas, would allow the counties and municipalities to make their own decisions regarding the recreational use of cannabis for Texans age 21 and older. This would allow local governments to take action to allow adults to possess and transport up to 2.5 ounces. And the bill would also impose a 10% tax on all cannabis products, which would be directed towards cannabis regulation, cannabis testing, government oversight, and funding for schools. Now, currently, Republican leaders, including Governor Greg Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, have repeatedly said that they don't support legalizing recreational cannabis use. While Texas has made progress with the Compassionate Use Act, we have been left behind on a potential revenue source that would increase investments in public education, stop unnecessary arrests for cannabis possession, and create jobs in our state, Gonzalez said in a statement. Now, it should be noted that obviously Gonzalez has filed a similar bill in 2021. It didn't get a vote. And there is speculation that even if the bill does get voted on and passes, it would not likely be that Abbott would sign it. That being said, it is good to see that these bills are being pushed forward. Similarly to we had a Republican who put forward a bill towards the Senate earlier this year regarding cannabis rescheduling. Again, I don't think that that's going to be passed, but unfortunately it takes a lot of these bills being pushed forward for even one or two of them to get put through. And as long as this discussion continues to happen, eventually people do get swayed. I do think that as you're seeing more and more states around Texas looking to some form of legalization, whether it's recreational or medicinal, it kind of forces them eventually to address this problem. And I do think that that's kind of the benefit when you're looking at state legalization and individual holdout states and individual municipalities that are kind of still curmudgeon-y about the cannabis industry, is because now the numbers have kind of swayed in the opposite direction. There's so many states and areas that have legalized to different extents. It does sort of force this issue on a lot of these holdout areas, and they are starting to realize that there's not really a benefit to them being the last holdout states. There is some benefit in watching. I would say that a lot of the East Coast states have benefited somewhat in being later adopters, and that they've been able to see how these markets play out, look for sort of the big issues that are going to be affecting their states in the long term, and then can have sort of better approaches right from the get-go. So having more of a limited license option, focusing on allowing for small business owners to get into the business early, having different programs like that to avoid some of the issues that, like, again, a California market has had. Obviously, there's a lot of great things about the California market, but obviously at the same time they have had their issues as well. And states that do adopt later, for instance, when Texas, I would say it's a when, not an if, when they do allow for recreational use, and they'll probably do it again in this type of bill where it would be county and sort of city individually deciding, I do think that they will have somewhat of an advantage in that they'll be able to look at a lot of the established markets and see how they want to legalize it in their particular state and what's going to be the best route for them. So there is some benefit to being a late adopter, but I do think it is a matter of when, not if. And again, as long as people like Gonzalez continue to push bills forward like this, it just becomes an inevitability. In other news, speaking of California, there's a new proposed bill aimed at changing the landscape of cannabis use in California. So the legalization put forward, or the legislation, sorry, put forward this month by Assemblyman Matt Haney, Democrat from San Francisco, would legalize the sale of food and non-alcoholic beverages at cannabis retailers and lounges. It's not unlike a neighborhood bar or cafe where people gather and get a lot of social value out of that. Haney said, we allow in many places on-site consumption of cannabis, but they're pretty sad places right now because you can't eat or drink. So alcohol would still not be allowed at the cannabis cafes under the Assembly Bill 374. And if passed, the bill and its counterpart introduced into the state Senate would allow localities and cities to permit the consumption of food and drink at cannabis retailers, and the state would not force the new regulations on municipalities, Haney said. And Haney's bill would also allow cannabis cafes to host live performances and sell tickets to events. Now, Haney said he has spoken with marijuana retailers from Los Angeles to Coachella Valley, and all of whom say the business must expand to survive. If we want this legal industry to survive in California, we have to change these laws. They are losing to the illegal cannabis industry, and the one thing that the legal cannabis small businesses can offer is an experience, Haney said. Cannabis businesses told us that they may have to close their doors unless the laws change, and the regulations that prohibit them from offering other products like food are a huge burden. So as I said, California's market, as much as it's an established market, has a lot of issues. The big issue has been the success of sort of black market stores along with the legal stores, basically because cannabis offenses are now just a misdemeanor, a minor fine. Obviously, you can have your assets seized, and there's still these stores can have things broken, they can be shut down, but the amount of cash that's coming in sort of negates all of that and makes it a wash and doesn't really make it that big of a risk for a lot of these business owners. So because of that, you're seeing a lot of these small shops basically operate right next to legal shops, and they're able to offer much more competitive pricing because they're not legally paying the same taxation and licensing fees that are quite steep in California. And this is what is keeping a lot of these smaller businesses out. So as much as I do think it's a great thing that they're going to be offering food and non-alcoholic beverages in these sort of cannabis cafes and basically having more of a consumption lounge option, I do think that overall what needs to be addressed is the high taxation and high cost of licensing and basically high cost of entry to get into the cannabis industry. Turning a lot of those illegal businesses legal is kind of something that they eventually need to address, but this does somewhat address the problem in that it allows legal businesses to have a competitive edge. They can now do more, and they don't obviously have the same risk, so it'd be a lot for these companies that are running legally to invest in this type of cannabis cafe business. Whereas for the legal companies, it makes sense for them. They have then different revenue streams. They can have different profit margins. They can deal with different things. For a lot of them, there's so much celebrity endorsement of cannabis in California. And a lot of them are obviously rap artists and different musicians. It'd be great for them to be able to have shows within their stores and be able to promote their own brands in that type of fashion. So I do think that there's a lot of benefits coming out of this bill. Don't know if we'll get pushed forward. Again, at least these are bills that are being much more strategic in that they're focusing on individual municipalities and communities that have basically their own say. So this way it isn't forcing anything onto these communities and also isn't giving people any real negative reasons to sort of reject this bill in a lot of ways. There's not a big reason to be against it because it doesn't have to affect your community unless your community specifically wants to push this through. So I do think that both of these bills are a good thing for the cannabis industry, obviously both kind of focusing on the same thing, which is more access and really extending the cannabis industry. For Texas, it'd be a much bigger deal for recreational, but for California, I do think that the consumption lounges and building a sort of structured consumption lounge model, California is sort of still the tastemaker for the cannabis industry. So if we can see a successful consumption lounge model in that area, I think that's a real benefit for the industry as a whole. Nevada has been looking at the same thing. And obviously, there's a few other states that are looking at the potential of this. I could see in New York, there could be a lot of cool potential there in the long term. And I do think that that's the business model that needs to come into play to make cannabis a actual competitor for alcohol to some extent when it comes to being a social lubricant or a social option. Is realistically, yes, there are some cannabis lounges in California. They do allow on-site consumption, but overall, they don't have the same atmosphere, they don't have the same structure, they don't have the same infrastructure as alcohol-based bars and restaurants that are competing with them. And again, that sort of social scene is really what's missing from the cannabis industry. And if we can get that in there, there's a lot of the stigma that can disappear. There's a lot more consumers who can actually kind of switch to cannabis consumption as their main social lubricant choice. And I do think that there's a lot of benefits to that over the long term. And I also think that the eventual sort of golden opportunity is to see cannabis-based restaurants that are really actually focusing on that. So having infused food, having beverages that are cannabis-based in the restaurant, and really just having a different restaurant and bar model than we see currently. I think that there's a lot of cool potential when you look at how that landscape could be changed with switching from alcohol to cannabis. And I see a lot of benefits for the restaurants and the bars specifically by doing this, because they would have to deal with less issues caused from being, you know, crazy drunk people who are going to cause much more problems than crazy high people. And I think that in general, it's a much easier business model to switch to. And if the taxation and sort of the barriers to entry weren't so steep like they are in California, I think you'd have a lot more people in that space. So I do think that as much as this bill is a good thing, there's still other things that need to be worked out in California as well if you really want to see that industry thrive and survive. Now, in another recent article from MJ Biz Daily, a growing number of Canadian cannabis consumers are now picking up the trend of buying pre-ground flower that's ready to roll into a joint or pack into pipes or vaporizers. Growth in the ground cannabis segment appears to be propelled by convenience-seeking, value-conscious customers who, although the Canadian trend hasn't reached U.S. markets, it is becoming a bigger thing in Canada at the moment. And it is a decent amount of growth. I definitely recommend clicking the link in the article to find out more of the details. They have some great graphs and data sets to look at that show how much this segment has grown. At the beginning of 2020, ground flower sales were nearly zero in four Canadian provinces, tracked by Seattle-based cannabis analytics firm Headset. And by December 2022, ground flower comprised 7.3% of all flower sales in the four Headset monitored provinces. That's a very, very significant portion of the highest revenue category, Headset Analytics Manager Cooper Ashley said. So it has seen significant growth. And I do think that as much as a cannabis consumer, there's a lot of negative sort of viewpoints when you're looking at pre-ground bud. I think most people would think this is kind of taboo. And that a lot of people like assessing their nugs as a big part of the whole weed buying experience. That being said, there's a bunch of people who just want convenience and simplicity. There's also the aspect that a lot of people don't want to be grinding when they're out and about. So having sort of a pre-ground bag, especially for vaporized users, is a big benefit. So I think it's a good trend to see, especially for Canadian producers, because this allows them to mill out a bunch of their very simple product. So speaking of which, Organigram Holdings, which has their Shred brand, has been leading the ground cannabis segment in the provincial markets tracked by Headset. Shred launched in September of 2020 as a ground cannabis offering, but the brand has since been extended to include pre-rolled joints, edibles, and vapes. Organigram CEO's Bina Goldenberg said that Shred's core ground flower product revolves around convenience and consistency. Unlike the potential stereotype of ground cannabis flower as an industrial byproduct, shake and trim left over from the processing of whole cannabis buds, Goldenberg described Shred as deliberate blends of different cannabis cultivars formulated for specific aroma profiles without using added terpenes. We've had a team of R&D people making sure that depending on the input materials, the amount, the mix of the blends is going to be different so that you're always getting the same output, flavor, and aroma, she said. Now, Goldenberg said Shred consumers tell Organigram that they get the same experience every time, they know what they're going to get, and they know what to expect from it. So I do think that there's a lot of benefits to paying attention to this market in Canada. I don't think it's going to be as big in the U.S. I do think that this is somewhat more because of the type of consumers that are now getting more involved in the cannabis industry. In Canada, you have a lot more elderly people and people who are just looking for sort of quick and convenient access. And I also think that the Canadian market is still not as established as a lot of U.S. markets. So the consumer preferences are still a little bit more, I don't want to say naive, but sort of basic. So I could see that this continues as a trend. I think it's a good opportunity for companies like Organigram or others in the area to basically turn some of their product into something more usable and also to lean into it and have specific blends that are just aimed at that. So it'll be interesting to see how much of that market continues to grow in Canada, at least for the moment. So lastly, today in news from Thailand, the country is tightening the country's marijuana regulations, issuing new guidance and measures intended to curb a rapid rise in recreational use of the drug since its decriminalization last year. And the topic is likely to be a major issue in general elections scheduled to happen in May. The government said last month that showing identification will be required when buying cannabis flower buds, which are rich in hallucinogenic compounds, and Bangkok aims to incorporate buyer information into a national database to track and analyze cannabis sales and purchases. Efforts to prevent abuse by foreign tourists have also been strengthened, and the Public Health Ministry last month released 10 guidelines for travelers on using marijuana in Thailand, including conditions for purchasing and growing. And the average monthly number of cases involving impaired consciousness and other issues due to marijuana has quadrupled since the legalization, the health ministry said. So Thailand taking a little bit of a backslide, as I think they've realized what basically most markets realize when you're dealing with cannabis, which is once you start decriminalizing or even allowing any legal access, it becomes very much a snowball effect. People just start becoming more bold by this and also feel emboldened to push the envelope, basically to push towards the next step, which is recreational use. That was something that when Thailand announced their decriminalization, they were very specific about, was that this is, they don't want this to lead to recreational use. Again, Asian communities still have a real strong stance against cannabis. They still have a lot of outdated propaganda when it comes to how they describe cannabis use, how they describe cannabis users, talking about how it's addictive, which has kind of been debunked many times over, talking about how dangerous it is, and the usual propaganda that we've heard in North America for a long time, but is still going strong in most countries in Asia. Again, you can look at some recent news coming out of Cambodia. That's pretty aggressive towards cannabis use. Hong Kong just banned CBD products. There's been a bunch of things that have had somewhat of a negative backslide when you're looking at overall viewing of cannabis within sort of Southeast Asia because of Thailand's decriminalization. Again, a lot of the countries around Thailand have been really putting their foot down as far as making sure that nothing that's grown or sold in Thailand is coming into their countries, really trying to pump the fear of cannabis and cannabis use in their countries and within their legal systems. So again, somewhat sad to see that Thailand is going to be cracking down, though I think that eventually this could just lead to a more structured environment for recreational use to come into play. That's usually what ends up happening. There's kind of no real way to avoid it. and it's very hard to recriminalize once you've decriminalized. We haven't really seen that in any market anywhere in the world where someone decided to decriminalize and then later push that back into illegal status. So I don't see that happening in Thailand either. I see that it's kind of a good thing that they have general elections scheduled to happen in May. So one of the candidates could obviously lean into this pretty hard and make sure that this is something they want to put forward. Again, it's kind of still difficult to look at how any Asian country is going to react or deal with cannabis legislation because there's still such a heavy stigma and negative propaganda that's surrounding the cannabis industry. But I do think that even though this is looking like somewhat of a bad thing in Thailand for the moment, I do think it's one of those necessary steps to get to a recreational market. Is there's always going to be this sort of pushback. People are going to have this discussion, and then hopefully enough data comes out to support that recreational use does make sense. And then you simply have a more structured framework to deal with. You can look at taxation. You can look at having a central database, whatever you want to have. But I do think it's an inevitability. So definitely paying attention to Thailand over the summer months, I think, will be a good indication of where Asian countries are going to be heading, as I do think that right now they're somewhat of the leader within the cannabis industry in Southeast Asia, and how they continue to act will probably affect other countries around them. That's all for today's podcast. Enjoy the rest of your day. That's all for today's podcast. Podcast is now a certified word trademark on the blockchain through Cognate Incorporated CM certification. InvestorIdeas.com podcasts are also available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and TuneIn. If you'd like to be a guest or sponsor of this podcast, please contact InvestorIdeas.com. Investor Ideas reminds all listeners to read our disclaimers and disclosures on the InvestorIdeas.com website, and this podcast is not an endorsement to buy products or services or securities. Investors are reminded that all investments involve risk and possible loss of investment. Investor Ideas does not condone the use of cannabis except where permissible by law. Our site does not possess, distribute, or sell cannabis products.